chapelboro.com. Go there quick and stay a while. chapelboro.com. More of what you live here for. And now, welcome to Who's Talking with D.G. Martin on News Talk 1360 WCHL.
Welcome to Who's Talking. This is D.G. Martin. I wonder if you remember the story in Puccini's opera, Madame Butterfly, about the Japanese geisha in the late 1800s enters into a contract of marriage with Lieutenant Pinkerton of the U.S. Navy, and she has his child, and then years later when Pinkerton returns, he's bringing his real American wife, Butterfly, so distraught that she kills herself. And did you ever wonder what happened to that child? Well, Angela Davis Garner, a wonderful author who is our neighbor over in Raleigh, the author of a great book about Japan from several years ago called Plum Wine, she's written the sequel to the opera. And maybe she can tell us what happened to Butterfly's child. Angela Davis Garner, welcome.
Thank you. I'm so glad to be here. Thanks for inviting me.
Well, your book is called Butterfly's Child. What happened to Butterfly's Child?
Well, it's a whole novel's worth.
Right.
But it begins after his mother has killed herself before his eyes, and his father, Pinkerton, the Navy lieutenant, and his American wife take the boy back to America, and he grows up there in a lot of grief for his mother and his homeland. He has a lot of things happen there within the family, and he eventually goes home back to Japan trying to find his mother's family. So that's the arc of the book. And in the meantime, I use several points of view. It's not only his story, though he's the main character, but there are points of view of his father and stepmother, Kate, Frank, Kate, a veterinarian who wandered in on the scene as I was writing, and Benji, the boy, as I've named him, and Butterfly, whose point of view opens the book.
Well, let's talk about Benji, who is the main character. This is the son of Butterfly and Lieutenant Pinkerton.
Yes.
And you bring him, in your novel, bring him back to Pinkerton's home country.
Yes.
As an American, and he's half Asian. He's not totally Japanese. He's not totally European.
Right.
And it's a time in America before we became as accepting as we are today of mixed race people and of Asians. You take him to the Midwest. How does he get along?
Well, he was a curiosity. He's blonde and has the Japanese features, and it's known that he's part Japanese. And the people in his small community are rather kind to him, but people there had not seen a Japanese person before. And there was really a mixed kind of response to Asian people at the time. There had been recently, as I'm sure you know, an enormous interest in Japan from the late 1800s, the Japanese culture, which swept art and European and American cultures, affected many painters who were interested in woodblock prints, affected Frank Lloyd Wright, and so on. So there was a lot of interest. But on the other hand, there was a good bit of prejudice that grew as more immigrants came from Japan. And there was a lot of trouble in California and along the coast as prejudice against Japanese grew as they became successful. And then immigration was limited and finally cut off. And that was the beginning of hostilities between Japan and America. And I get into that at a later point in the book. But I thought that the local people would probably react in the kind of way that his family would present him. And in the family, there's he has an uneasy place in the family because his parentage is kept a secret. That is the condition under which Kate, Pinkerton's wife, has agreed to bring his mistress's child to live with them.
So
no one is to know.
Yeah, so the family situation is that Pinkerton, who's the father of this child, knows that he's the father. The child, I can't remember, the child sort of knows that,
he knows
that Pinkerton is his dad, but he's not supposed to tell anybody.
Right.
And Kate is the mother who was sort of surprised to find that her beloved had this relationship in Japan before they got married.
Exactly. And when she goes to Japan and learns about this woman and her child, and Frank asks her if she will take him with her and with them back to America, at first she refuses. This is the first thing I had to figure out in the book, going from Puccini to a realistic novel, to try to figure out the motivations of these people, why they would take the boy away. So Kate has strong Christian convictions, and she feels that it's her right as a Christian woman, her responsibility as a Christian woman, to take care of this poor child. But she's haunted by the image of Butterfly, and she knows that Frank, her husband, is still possessed by her in some way. Now, Benji does know that Frank is his father. He remembers his mother telling him about his father, and he'd seen a picture of him. And then it turns out that he finds a picture that has been sent with him of his father and his original mother, Frank and Pip Butterfly. So he knows very well that Frank's his father. Throughout the novel, Frank more and more distances himself and says he is not his father. So that's a lot of conflict brewing.
In any situation in which a child, in which there's a marriage and a child from a previous marriage, or a child who's the whose one parent is there, but the other is a step parent or related, all of these things in any situation, whether or not there's a mixed race situation or not, there are always special situations and special challenges, and In your novel, you deal with the general special challenges of having your spouse's child as a responsibility, and this weighs heavily on Kate.
Exactly.
Wife.
In any family where there's a step parent, a step child, there is probably going to be some tension before everything settles down, and it may be very happy. I've been in that situation myself, and I know many people who have, but there are challenges, as everyone knows who's been through this. So that was at the heart of my interest here, but it's more difficult for these people because it's the mistress's child. I guess it's like, what if Elizabeth Edwards had to live with John Edwards' child?
That's a great analogy because she, as we could tell, was carefully thinking about and preparing for how that might work. So yeah, I mean that's a topic for another program, but it shows that it presents a special challenge, and this is an enriching feature of your book, in which this family situation, the difficulties and challenges and opportunities, I guess, are enhanced by that. Now, there's a grandmother involved as well, who also has to reach her own adaptation to this child. And how does that work?
Well, the whole situation is very volatile, and this is what drives the book. And she does play a part in that. Kate is worried that Frank's mother, who lives with them, is going to guess the truth. And indeed, she finally does. At first, she's very wary of the boy, doesn't like him, is very disapproving. But she sees how lonely and and sweet he is, and she becomes an advocate for him, which he very much needs. So the Benji's father and stepmother are fighting in some ways, but the grandmother eventually takes him on, and she helps him a lot. I don't know what would have happened to him without grandmother's support.
We're visiting with Angela Davis Gardner, who's the author of Butterfly's Child. This is a sequel to Puccini's opera, Madame Butterfly, and deals with what happened to the child of Lieutenant Pinkerton and Butterfly's relationship. Angela Davis Gardner, and I'll be right back after this short break.
Chapelboro.com. Go there quick and stay a while. Chapelboro.com. More of what you live here for. And now back to Who's Talking with D.G. Martin on News Talk 1360 WCHL.
Welcome back to Who's Talking. This is D.G. Martin. We're talking about Butterfly's Child. What happened to the child of Lieutenant Pinkerton and Madame Butterfly in the opera, Madame Butterfly, Puccini's great opera, Madame Butterfly? Angela Davis Gardner, one of North Carolina's most respected authors, has written that novel. And Angela Davis Gardner, we've talked about the child, and you got us introduced to what happens to the child. But we'd also be interested in what happened to Lieutenant Pinkerton, the father of this boy, who brings him back. What kind of guy does Lieutenant Pinkerton turn out to be?
In the opera, he's a very selfish and callow man who's thinking only of himself and misusing Butterfly. So that's what I had to begin with as a character. And as I developed him in the novel, he's much more complicated. And at first, he was a villain sort of character as I worked on him, but I had to keep digging to get at his complexity and the reasons for his having his obsession with Butterfly. He is, he's been a Navy man all his life, but now has settled on his father's farm. His father has died. He settled on his father's farm in Illinois. He'd run away from the farm as a young man. And his father has died, and he's taken over. And it turns out that he is a very poor farmer. But he tries hard, and he tries hard to make a home for Kate and Benji and the children that he and Kate have together. But he's very unhappy about being settled down, especially on this farm, the drudgery of the farm. I developed his relationship with his father to try to understand Frank and his issues as a father. He's an alcoholic. He's he can be brutal, unkind, but he's also has a strong depth of love too. So he's complicated.
The complexity, the well, golly, I'm sorry to stutter about this, but there's a complex relationship between the father, that is Lieutenant Pinkerton, and the boy and his son, Benji.
Yes.
And they're always complicated. I mean, the relationship between men and their sons are often complicated and often break up over different viewpoints or perception that the father is not treating the son right. But and you have this feature in your book, and ultimately Benji runs away and goes on a trek. This becomes kind of a novel of travel.
Right.
And I don't want you to give away any more than you want to about your book, but would you tell us about the travel feature of the book in which this mixed-raced Asian-American boy starts out, a teenage boy at this point, starts out traveling from the Middle West towards San Francisco, ultimately hoping to get back to Japan. What goes on? What goes on the travel? And how did you set out to make it a travel novel or a mini travel novel within a novel?
Well, I knew that the novel was going to be, in its arc, would be a quest. And some of the one of the major themes of all novels is the quest. That's a kind of a standard novel plot.
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
And so that worked for me very well because I knew he had to go home. And then I had to get him across the country as a young man. So he sets out alone with just a few provisions and has to live by his wits. It's almost winter. He's looking for jobs on farms. There are none to be found. He runs into a...
So is he on foot? Is he walking along?
He's on his pony, Kuro. And he loves this horse. And along the way, things don't go well for the horse.
Well, I want you to tell this story in detail because you got one North Carolina character in this book, and
right.
There's a little, you can tell this story of this jerk,
yes.
This jerk from North Carolina.
Right. Well, as a North Carolina person, I know how to draw a North Carolina accent and so on. Well, along the way, he meets a tree salesman. Tree salesman at that time roamed or traveled the Midwest and the South and the Northeast too, I guess, with trees to sell to farmers who lived in areas without trees. And he's, it turns out, a con man. But he takes Benji on. He hires him to plant trees, but he eventually uses him and, he introduces Benji, first of all, to women, and he pays him a little bit. He takes him to what is essentially a whorehouse. So Benji's quite interested in all of these activities that they're going through.
He supervises Benji's sexual initiation.
Sexual initiation, which is very important in his life, of course. And they keep going on to heading west. Digby claims that he has some more trees to deliver further west, and Benji can't understand why they're having to sleep out in the snow. Finally, they come to a widow's house. Digby has said that she's waiting for him, that her husband had died, and that she will give Benji a job. And he's just sure of this, but it turned out Digby came out of the house saying, he's not dead yet, and seems to be very angry about this. Well, Benji is crushed. He thought this would be the place where he would be able to get on for the winter because the Midwestern winters, as everybody knows, are brutal, and he was just out there alone in the cold on his horse. The woman does take him in. In the meantime, Digby leaves with Benji's horse. And then I pick up the story after the winter. Benji has spent the winter there, and he goes on west on the train. He stops, and by the way, I was wondering how I was going to get Benji and his horse all the way across the country. That would be a boring story.
So you just got the horse.
So, it just happened that his horse got stolen. That worked well for the plot. And then I had done research in Denver and found out that there was a Japanese community in Denver during that period. So I had him get to Denver, happened to find that community, which nurtures him and teaches him that he learns some Japanese there. Then he goes on the train toward California, and it just so happened in my novel I got to the place where he was going to get to San Francisco, and I realized, gosh, this is right when the San Francisco earthquake happened. I mean, it was almost to the day. It was to the
so that was
month.
That wasn't planned in advance. That
was not planned. I just realized I was trying very hard to figure out passage of time and so on, how old he was and how long he would spend in various places, and I realized, oh, what a gift, for my novel, that the earthquake happened just then, just as he was getting there, because it made it much more interesting, of course, the story.
Well, it's fascinating to me what Benji's doing. This is, for those of you who may have just tuned in, Benji is the son of Lieutenant Pinkerton and Madame Butterfly from the opera. And he's been brought to America by his father, Lieutenant Pinkerton, and now Benji's running away. He really wants to get back to Japan, where he feels his true home is. And he's made his way to Denver, then to San Francisco. And in San Francisco, he encounters a Japanese community that's complicated, and more complicated because of the earthquake. How did you use the earthquake to enhance the excitement or to enhance the plot?
Well, for one thing, I learned that during the earthquake, the area where Chinese and Japanese people had been living was destroyed. And the a person that he had met on the train, a Japanese gentleman, had survived. No, he didn't get to San Francisco before the earthquake. That happened on his way and when he was with Benji. So he got there. He was a wealthy man who has a an art shop, an import-export art goods. And he and Benji became attached to each other. And so when Benji gets to California, Mr. Matsumoto is already there. And he goes to an area which has recently been formed where the Japanese have gathered. And it's still a prominent area in San Francisco, Japantown. And just as Benji had gotten there, they were building Japantown, and Mr. Matsumoto had established himself there. And he becomes a father figure, one of several father figures Benji attaches himself to throughout the book. And he teaches him a number of things he needs to know before he can go to Japan, including Japanese manners and some Japanese history and language. He polishes his language. And he didn't want him to leave to go to Japan, but he did understand he needed to go there. So that was a very important part of Benji's growing up and being able to move on.
And Benji has traveled across the country, leaving his father and his stepmother and his half-siblings and friends who loved him just behind. Did he just leave and forget about them?
He hasn't forgotten about them, but he had to put it all behind in order to move forward. The person he's most attached to is the veterinarian named Keith, who was a father figure to him. But right now, he's interested. He's in himself and his forward movement, and that becomes important throughout the book because the other points of view are, I continue to use those. Keith, the veterinarian, Frank, Kate, they're at home wondering what's happened to him. Their lives are also going on. But these points of view weave together until the end, in contrast to each other.
We're visiting with Angela Davis Gardner about her new book, Butterfly's Child. She and I'll be right back.
Chapelboro.com. Go there quick and stay a while. Chapelboro.com. More of what you live here for. And now back to Who's Talking with D.G. Martin on News Talk 1360 WCHL.
Welcome back to Who's Talking. This is D.G. Martin. We're talking about Butterfly's Child. That Butterfly's Child is the child of Madame Butterfly and her American naval officer lover, Lieutenant Pinkerton. And the child, Benji, was brought back to America by Pinkerton and Pinkerton's wife, raised on an Illinois farm, but always drawn back to Japan. And in the book, Angela Davis Gardner, the one of the interesting things to me was that this child, who's, of course, mixed race, part European, part Japanese, has Japanese features, but he's got blonde hair. And how do people in the Japanese community react to the Japanese are famously racist is not the right word, but they're race conscious. I guess that's the right word, that they are not themselves always accepting of people of mixed race or of a different race. So how does Benji react to what does he do with this blonde hair?
Well, first of all, let me just make a general comment about his being of mixed race. And the Japanese call a person like Benji a bat between cultures, not quite at home in either place. Because Japan is such a, this is a generalization, but because Japan is such a homogeneous society, it is harder for someone who is of mixed race or who is an outsider of some other background to find a home there, you know, completely.
It wouldn't be unlike Illinois, our Midwestern farm town, where people of different race or mixed race were rare in Illinois as they are even today in Japan.
Right, and this is a problem or a phenomenon that has continued to multicultural lives, which so many people have now. It's very interesting and not something that you can describe easily. I've talked to many people, you know, Japanese Americans, in this day who talk about going back and forth and the bits of difficulty they have adjusting to each place. But in Benji's case, and
here's this blonde-haired mixed-race kid.
He's blonde-haired. It's early 1900s, and he's preparing to go to Japan. So Mr. Matsumoto says Benji has been coloring his hair with shoe polish.
He turned it black. He doesn't like his blonde hair.
Right. He wants to look more Japanese, but of course, shoe polish is not looking very elegant. And just about that time, I was doing some research on hair dye, and Grierson's hair dye had just been invented by the time Benji was in San Francisco. So I had Mr. Matsumoto get him some hair dye and dye his hair so that it looked better, and then Benji takes a number of bottles of that with him to Japan so that he, in his attempt to look more Japanese or as purely Japanese as possible.
Well, here's this poor little mixed-race kid in San Francisco got friends. He's always seems to be able to make friends, but he wants to get to Japan. How can you get a poor guy without any money back to Japan and without any connections there?
Right. Well, first of all, he's very plucky and courageous. He's going to get there. But as far as the money goes, I mean, I think he would have gotten there even without Mr. Matsumoto. He would have saved the money he needed to, worked hard, and eventually gotten there. But I needed for him to get on there for the sake of my novel. So Mr. Matsumoto helped him financially so that he is able to get there quickly, within a couple of years.
In terms of the drive to get there, Benji, again, his mother in his mind is dead.
Yeah.
And he saw this happen. And what does he want in Japan? What is driving him?
He wants to find his family. He thinks he's going to find his mother's family. His father had told him that she came from a samurai family. And he thinks that they are going to welcome him and that he will finally have a home where he feels entirely at home. And that's his fantasy.
And how does that, where does he go? Where does the ship take him?
He goes to Nagasaki, which is where he was from. The ship stopped in Yokohama on the way and at Tokyo, but he didn't get off. He wanted to wait until he got to his home city. He gets off the ship in Nagasaki and zooms down and kisses the earth. He's so happy to be home. But once he's there, he has trouble finding out anything about his mother or her family. And he learns that as a mixed-race person, he would need to live in a certain neighborhood called Juzenzi. And that's the neighborhood, he learns, where a sailor would have lived with a Japanese woman. So he understands that that's the place where he needs to go to look for his mother. He has no idea what her background is, who her parents were. But he begins a search there for his mother and her family, which takes up his story for most of the rest of the book. And one place he looks is in the court, the flower district, the area where geisha and courtesans live, which is called Maruyama, and which is still there, and it's you can see, well, it was fascinating to me to do research there in the geisha quarters and in the mixed race neighborhood. But he looks for her there, and on why he's looking for her, he meets a woman who helps him and whom he eventually falls in love with. So,
well, now did you go there to do research on the ground?
Oh yes, I cannot write about a place that I hadn't been to and know well.
Well, now a few little things happened in between today and going back in time to destroy some of the some of that town, at least.
Right. Well, the bomb, the atomic bomb, destroyed part of Nagasaki, but not all of it. It fell inland a little bit, and it's a hilly city, which protected part of the city from the bombing. And the edge of the city where Benji lived was not destroyed. It was, of course, it was affected, but not completely destroyed. Now, over time, people have just taken down the old buildings and erected new buildings. So it's hard for me to find the old buildings to look at, but some people, I had a research team helping me. And once I see the geography, the general layout, the ocean, the inlet, the mountains, the streets, the stones, which have not changed, I can begin to imagine what it was like, 100 years before.
Well, now, in those days, this was an entry point for foreigners to come, for the naval ships to stop, and yes. I guess tourists to come as well. Does it remain a tourist town? When I hear about people going to Japan, I don't hear them going to Nagasaki, but is it a tourist place today as it used to be?
Not as much as Kyoto, for instance, mm-hmm. but yes, a lot of people who are interested in Japan visit Nagasaki. And the main interest of Nagasaki is that it was the earliest city to be affected by Western influence. The Dutch established a colony there early on, I believe, in the 18th century, the Portuguese had come first. There were French people there, English people there early on because of trade. It was a major port for trade. So there was a lot of foreign influence. There was a strong Christian community for a long time. Japanese Christians had been influenced by missionaries. So there's a lot of East-West and intermingling and influence there. So that's a fascinating part of Nagasaki's history.
Well, we're visiting with Angela Davis Garner about her new book, Butterfly's Child. She and I'll be right back.
Chapelboro.com. Go there quick and stay a while. Chapelboro.com. More of what you live here for. And now back to Who's Talking with D.G. Martin on News Talk 1360 WCHL.
Welcome back to Who's Talking. This is D.G. Martin. Angela Davis Garner is my guest. Her latest novel is Butterfly's Child. It's a sequel to Puccini's opera, Madame Butterfly. So the Butterfly's Child is the child the child of Lieutenant Pinkerton and Butterfly. And Angela Davis Gardner's novel takes this child from Japan to America, to the Middle West, where he grows up on Lieutenant Pinkerton's farm. But unsatisfied with his American home, he's drawn back to Japan and to the family and situation of his mother, where his mother grew up, finds himself in Nagasaki. And in your book, the Angela Davis Garner, the something I identified with was this guy getting off the boat, and he can speak a little Japanese, but he's not a master of Japanese, and he just gets off. What's he going to do? How's he going to make a living? And of course, he's better equipped than anybody else to talk to these English-speaking people who are come in on the ships in Nagasaki, I guess.
Right. So it's to his great advantage that this is a port where there are many English speakers, and the need for people who can translate and speak to tourists. So he has the idea of looking for a job in a shop. He wants to work in import-export anyway, and he finds a store for tourists to buy Japanese souvenirs, and he becomes the helper there. He gets a job right away. And I learned that the way that the tourists the way that shop owners interested tourists, first of all, in their wares was to take a little boat out to the large ship lying in harbor where the tourists were and climb up rope ladders to the ship and sell their wares, hawk their wares up and down the ship. I thought that was really fascinating. And then the ships were not able to dock right at the border of the land. They had to take, people had to take little boats to get to shore. But anyway, I found out where his store would have been and developed his job there working for a man named Mr. Tsuji. And then eventually he's successful enough that he can establish his own business and gradually does become bilingual.
Well, you've been so generous to share this story on the travel of Butterfly's Child all the way to the United States and then all the way back to Japan. And a lot of things happen to him once he gets to Japan. And I'm just going to make – just people are going to have to read the book to find out how it all turns out. But it's a wonderful story of different cultures and of family and different people. And for me – I just love the entrepreneurial spirit and can-do attitude of this mixed-race child who comes back to Japan and incredibly is able to make his way there. We just got a minute or two, but Angela Davis Garner, you have a long-standing interest in Japan, and we've watched Japan now. We're interested in Japan again, all the way from the soccer victory of these incredible Japanese young women, but more still today about the reaction of the Japanese to the tragedy of the earthquake and tsunami. And then Japan struggling with its place in the world. What are your friends in Japan worried about these days?
Well, Japanese are in general famous for their stoicism, but my friends are concerned that the government is not giving them enough information and feel that they are in collusion with the power companies so as not to give enough information. And I've talked to a newscaster at PBS, Ray Suarez, about this. I happened to meet him recently, and he said, well, we can't cover this story very well because we don't have the information. So they're living without adequate information, but they are carrying on as the Japanese are famous for doing. They're used to calamity. That's one thing my friends have said. They live through typhoons and volcanic eruptions and earthquakes, many earthquakes and large fires. They have limited natural resources. People have learned to get along with each other in ways that perhaps Americans, say, in New Orleans, who looted after Katrina, do not. But one thing they're really concerned about is that the effect on the Japanese economy, the foreign demand for Japanese products has declined sharply since this tragedy, and tourism is down. Many people on business or artists traveling there have canceled their commitments because they're worried about radiation, fears of which are probably way overblown. But without proper information, it's hard to know.
What about traveling to Japan? Is this would would you like to go back and visit? And,
oh, yeah.
And would you go now, and would you think this is a good time for folks to make their first trip to Japan?
Well, I think the main area which has been affected is north of Tokyo. I don't think that... I probably wouldn't drink the water in Tokyo, but in areas further south, I think, the environment is fine. I'm no expert. I wouldn't know. I've been to Japan 3 times, and I think of it as a second home. I'm very much a southerner, I want to say, and a southern writer. But Japan just happens to be my second home. My mother had lived in Japan as a foreign correspondent before World War II, and that's how I got so invested in it.
Well, it was a blessing for your North Carolina friends that you did, because you brought us 2 great books, Plum Wine and now Butterfly's Child. And thanks for taking the extra time to share a lot about this wonderful book with your friends in Chapel Hill. And we're grateful to you.
Well, thank you so much for your interest, D.G. I really appreciate it.
Angela Davis Gardner is the author of Butterfly's Child. It's a sequel to Puccini's opera of Madame Butterfly. It's a great book and by a great author. Thanks to her for being our guest. Thanks to all y'all for listening. It's been Who's Talking. This is D.G. Martin. I'll be right back here soon.